No. But anyway, yeah, thanks very much to Chris for the invitation. I don't think many, if any of you, were here last time I was, which was sometime in 2006. In a way, this is a follow-up to the talk that I gave then. At the end of that talk, I suggested, just in the interest of ending with a wild speculation, that it might be possible to formulate something like the standard so-called measurement problem of quantum mechanics in the context of a much more general framework for non-classical probabilistic theories. And I suppose that one plausible summary of the talk I'm going to give today is, yes, yes, it is possible to do that. And it's not difficult, and probably it shouldn't surprise us that it's not difficult. But amplifying a little bit on that theme, or elaborating on that theme, I want to say a number of things, probably too many things, about measurement and the interplay between measurement and entanglement in this setting, this general probabilistic setting that some of us, John and Howard and I and Matt Lever and others have been working with. All right, so in view of the title, of course, I have to tell you something about what a general probabilistic theory is. And I'll spend a good part of the talk actually reviewing that formal framework. This is marvelous there. And I have to say something about entanglement, and I'll talk about what that looks like in this setting. And I'll have to say something about measurement, and I'll do that too. And if we get there, and since the talk is long and our time is short, we might possibly not, but I'll try. We might say a little bit about what if anything, all of this tells us about standard interpretations of quantum mechanics. And just to have a stab at that, I'll tackle a very simplified, attenuated version of Everett's interpretation. And by that, I don't mean modern many worlds interpretations, which are far too sophisticated for me to handle at this stage, but just Everett's interpretation as in Everett's early papers, right? Which don't make sense, but what the hell? Okay, we'll talk about that if we get there. And if I have a lot of time, if I really fly through the rest of this, I'll talk a little bit about a kind of a recipe for building, if you like, toy theories, general examples of generalized probability theories that have a great deal of symmetry with the aim of constructing such theories that would sustain an Everett-like interpretation, even though they're not quantum mechanical. That may be further than we'll get. However, before I undertake any of this, I want to start by setting the stage by talking about two different views that you can take, really two rival intellectual traditions about what kind of theory quantum mechanics is. These two rival views about what kind of theory quantum mechanics is lead to two rather different senses about why we ought to be puzzled by quantum mechanics, what it is about quantum mechanics that's puzzling. And from a certain point of view, what I'm going to attempt in this talk is the exercise of trying to take both of these views simultaneously, sort of a cubist view of quantum mechanics. Okay? So here we go. Oh, this is a quote I wanted to put up just because Matt isn't here. I think this has a lot in it, and it's relevant in some sense to the morals that we'll draw. So okay. Okay. So exactly. So okay. So okay. So let's start just by reviewing the sort of cartoon version of quantum mechanics that one finds in sort of semi-elementary textbooks on the subject, just sort of for reference, I guess. According to this cartoon version, quantum systems are characterized by pure states, which are represented by unit vectors in the complex Hilbert space, or if you're a little more sophisticated, maybe rays in that Hilbert space. It has dynamics implemented by unitary operators on that same Hilbert space. And it has observables that correspond to self-adjoint operators on that Hilbert space. And all of that apparatus is connected to our actual observations about the world by means of the Born rule, or what's sometimes more grandly called the minimal statistical interpretation. Phrase that I learned from John Ehrman long ago, but it's a helpful phrase, the minimal statistical interpretation, or MSI, according to which the probability that observable A takes a certain value, lambda, because this is a real valued observable, if it's measured in state psi, is given by this familiar expression, the eigenprojection of A, corresponding to eigenvalue lambda, applied to psi, inner product of psi. It's maybe worth mentioning, or at any rate, I never let myself fail to take an opportunity to remind people of this fact, the most astonishing mathematical fact, that if you grant me just the structure of the observables and this minimal statistical interpretation, everything else is derivable. Now, not the choice of a particular Hamiltonian, of course, but the rest of the framework follows from Gleason's theorem, Wigner's theorem, Wigner-Wright theorem, Stone's theorem, and so on. Okay. I'm saying 1 and 2 are not necessary. Yes, that's right. Formally, those are not necessary. Correct. Gleason's theorem will give you that for sure. So actually, what I said is not quite right. What I wrote is correct. Once you have the structure of the observables, and I guess just the fragment of this that says that the measurement outcomes correspond to these projections, and a non-contextuality assumption about probability. So that's it. Yes.
The way you stated the minimal statistical interpretation, though, you referred to the state psi. I mean, properly, you should say, suppose the probability of the observable A taking value lambda is some function over P of lambda, and that function is non-contextual, then it must be the case that...
That's what Gleason's theorem says. So that's the non-contextuality assumption I alluded to.
Right.
But in the usual textbook presentations, all of that is glossed over.
It just seems to me that MSI assumes axiom 1. So if you really want to say axiom 1, then why?
The way I phrased it, it does. But that's kind of what Chris meant about the MSI not really being needed either.
Okay, good.
You can even do better. Anyway, this is just all sort of for reference, fixed notation, what have you. But I want to point out that there are two different ways to look at this cartoon picture. Let's go back to the picture for a moment. Forget the minimal statistical interpretation. Just forget it. You have a Hilbert space, good. States of your system are represented by unit vectors in the Hilbert space, good. Unitary operators give you the evolution, good. Gee, that reminds me of something. That reminds me of every course on linear PDEs that I ever took. Yes, I have the classical wave equation or the diffusion equation or what have you, and subject to certain analytical conditions, the solutions just are vectors in a Hilbert space, and the evolution just is. Okay, so one way to look at this cartoon picture is that what we're faced here is a linear dynamical theory of a reasonably familiar sort with a reasonably familiar kind of analytical apparatus, but with a rather mysterious probabilistic interpretation appended to it. That's one way to look at that picture if you come at it from a certain kind of factor, a certain kind of education preference. Another way to look at it is to go back here and say, minimal statistical interpretation, sure, observables give me spectral decompositions, these guys attach probabilities to those. I understand probabilities, that's fine. Nothing mysterious about the interpretation. What's mysterious is all of this stuff, and maybe the Hilbert space. Right? Who ordered that? So the other way to interpret this, the other way to perhaps be puzzled by this, is to say what we're looking at here is some kind of perhaps fairly conservative extension of classical probability theory with a relatively unproblematic interpretation, to the extent that we have a particular interpretation of probability theory we're comfortable with and that we like, apply it, but with a mysterious mathematical apparatus. Okay? Come at this from either of two points of view, depending upon the angle from which you view the theory, you're going to find one or the other aspect of it familiar and the other aspect puzzling. They don't seem to go together, at least in a obvious way. Accordingly, each of these views faces a kind of characteristic problem. For view A, I don't have good names for these, maybe someone will suggest good names. For view A, quantum mechanics is a nice dynamical theory with a mysterious interpretation. For that view, the problem is a problem of interpretation. coming from within that tradition, one doesn't want perhaps to take something like measurement as a primitive term. One says to oneself, well, I'm not comfortable just assuming that as part of my axiomatic framework. I'd like a dynamical account of what sort of process a measurement is and how measurements come to have outcomes and how those outcomes come to have the probabilities that the Born rule says that they do. So what one is looking for, perhaps, is some set of interpretive principles, let's say, and then maybe some further mathematics, such that if we start with the dynamical apparatus, the Hilbert space, the unitary evolution, maybe the structure of the observables, perhaps not, and we add these appropriate principles, then we'll be able to derive the minimal statistical interpretation. That, I think, is what drives a great part of the literature on so-called realist and especially so-called no-collapse realist interpretations of quantum mechanics, the desire to complete that picture. Now, if you take view B, as all right-thinking people do, or maybe not, I'm sorry. If you take view B, measurement is not per se problematic. Measurement seems an entirely reasonable primitive in a probabilistic theory. The problem is that the minimal statistical interpretation seems to very badly underdetermine the formal apparatus. Where does all of that apparatus come from? What one wants is some further plausible constraints, let's call them scruples, from which that apparatus will follow, right? So you want to take the minimal statistical interpretation, add some constraints that you feel that you understand as somehow natural or meaningful probabilistically, and simply derive the full mathematical apparatus of quantum mechanics. Yes?
You didn't include this. Is this about psi A, psi B?
Not really. I'm being very sloppy about this. What I really mean at this point by the MSI is simply the idea that you've got a bunch of observables and states that assign probabilities to those.
Okay. So far more abstract.
A far more abstract
the MSI.
The MSI of quantum mechanics are already, the way I framed it, presupposes much of the apparatus. And I mean abstracting from the MSI seems very, very bad. We know, in fact, it doesn't just seem to, it does. Now, it's kind of obvious when you see it presented this way that these are dual problems, some formal sense. One would sort of think that there might be some sense in trying to tackle them simultaneously, but in fact, just as a historical or sociological fact, these two points of view are usually seen as antithetical. People who adopt one tend to have little use for the other. These two problems tend to be pursued very much in isolation from one another. I don't know that that's how it ought to be. But in any case, I do want to undertake an exercise, the exercise of trying to take both points of view at once, at least to this extent. I'm going to adopt view B as a sort of starting point. I'm going to, in other words, accept that quantum mechanics simply is one among many probabilistic theories. Right? So to some extent, maybe I'm privileging that point of view. But I do want to ask, within that assumption, whether a fairly generic probabilistic theory can, in principle, support a dynamical account of measurement as per view A, or at least as per the demand posed.
Just to brace myself, what do you mean by dynamical account of measurement?
More specific about that later. But very, very roughly, I mean that one wants some sort of account of measurement in which one is not simply asserting that measurements are done, their outcomes occur for no particular reason, and they occur with certain probabilities, but rather there's some sort of dynamical evolution. According to which initial states, maybe in a situation where you have an apparatus coupled with an object system, which the initial state of the object system evolves into some final state of the apparatus that records the fact that
So you're not referring to like a continuous collapse model or a GRW?
I'm going to be far more general and abstract than that, though possibly that would fall within the scope of what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to try to be very general about what counts as a dynamical account of measurement, although I will try to be precise about it.
So it might include like a Stein's field dilation?
Oh yeah, it's, you'll see, the requirements I'm going to impose are pretty minimal. But at any rate, I want to at least entertain the question. You give me one of these generalized probabilistic theories, I'll be more precise about what they look like in a moment. Is it consistent with the structure of that theory that there be some sort of dynamical account of measurement? And if I start to impose further conditions on what that dynamic should look like or how it should behave on its niceness, are those conditions substantial constraints in the theory? So one of the things that we're going to discover is that when one does ask this question, one is led very quickly and really quite easily to a generic version of the quantum measurement problem. I'll state it more precisely later, but in a nutshell, what it says is, if your theory is not classical, if it admits entangled states in a certain sense, you'd better not expect that your dynamics will be reversible. Or even a little more general, generally, you better not expect that it's going to take pure states to pure states all the time. Or you're going to have some trouble. So having presented that generic measurement problem, or having gotten to that generic measurement problem, we can ask the following question. I think it's a natural question to ask, at least in the spirit of an interesting exercise. Great, there's the familiar quantum measurement problem, and there's an entire and vast literature devoted to interpretive strategies for getting around that problem, for avoiding that problem, or evading that problem. And those strategies correspond more or less to familiar interpretations of quantum mechanics. I'm thinking here specifically of no-collapse interpretations, but collapse interpretations, I suppose, one could entertain as well. The question I want to raise, the two broad questions I want to raise is, great, if the measurement problem is actually a fairly generic feature of non-classical probabilistic theories, can one make these various familiar interpretive strategies work also in that very general setting? So let me not get ahead of the story. To make a start on answering that question, and it's only a start, I'm going to consider what's required, what I think might be required for a probabilistic theory to sustain a kind of attenuated version of the Everett interpretation. At least I'll try to do that if we have time. Okay,
your overall interpretation. So supposing you find the answer to be yes, then one concludes that these interpretive strategies certainly don't pin down quantum theory from among this landscape of possible theories.
That's correct.
And then it's sort of perhaps evidence that view B is better capable of explaining the formalism than view A is.
Or at least that view A is not compelling unless you've got some independent reason for just wanting to insist that physical theories maybe shouldn't be at bottom probabilistic or something like that. So yeah, basically I agree. And I think that's part of the motivation for this. But of course, the other horn of that dilemma is this. Let's suppose that appropriately formulated, some version of a general Everettian interpretation. I shouldn't say generic because the point is it wouldn't be. Let's suppose that without referencing the specific formal apparatus of Hilbert space quantum mechanics, one could write down abstractly what it would require for a probabilistic theory to sustain some kind of many worlds interpretation and do so in a pretty plausible, compelling way. If one could then derive that formal structure of quantum mechanics, now all of a sudden the Everettian interpretation is doing work for you. You might even want to say that that's evidence that it has some physical content.
And you could perhaps even imagine comparing the degree to which two interpretive strategies have that by saying this one works very generically, this one constrains a theory much more. So that's the ultimate aim. But I don't have much to offer in the way of conclusions along those lines. So thank you for the remark, but we're not going to get there. Okay, I do want to say something about what these general probabilistic theories look like. And so let's start by talking about probabilistic models. Theory roughly is a class of models. There are lots of ways to frame this discussion, and I've just chosen one that I happen to be a little more comfortable with. Naively, probabilities attached to outcomes of measurements. So a place to start is to suppose that you have a collection of measurements. I'm going to identify measurements with their outcome sets. I'm thinking here of really of discrete measurements, each maybe with a finite set of outcomes. So formally, a test space is a collection, fractur A here, of non-empty sets, which I call tests, each test understood as the outcome set of some measurement or some other sort of entity that has alternative outcomes, one of which must occur in a particular trial. Given such a collection of outcome sets, I will generically write big X for the union of them all. That's the total outcome space for this collection of experiments. A probability weight, or as I'll sometimes say, a state on a test space fractur A, is a mapping from the total outcome set to the unit interval, summing to one over each independently over each test, that is, over the set of outcomes of each measurement in fractur A. Okay? So far, so good. Any questions just about that setup? Just got a bunch of STAT 101 style discrete sample spaces, if you like. And the state assigns probabilities to the outcomes of simultaneously the outcomes of all of those in a non-contextual way. The set of states or probability weights is convex. I'll denote it by omega of the test space, and it's called the state space of the test space. So what I mean by a probabilistic model, then, is a test space together with a set gamma, a distinguished set gamma of states. I want to allow for the possibility that not every mathematically possible state is perhaps one that you want to consider as part of your model. So it's a test space with a restricted but compact and convex set of states. I'll usually suppose that it's outcome separating, which simply means there are sufficiently many states in gamma so that you can distinguish distinct outcomes. You won't have two outcomes that have the same probability in every state. But that's dispensable for some purposes. Roughly speaking, a probabilistic theory is just going to be a class of models of this type, but I'll be a little more specific about what I mean by a probabilistic theory in a moment. Well, here are some examples just to illustrate the notation of the jargon. If script A, rather fractur A, contains a single test, say a single finite set E, then states are simply probability weights on E. Pure states are point masses. This is just the setting for, what did I call it, freshman statistics. Nothing special here. It is worth noting that in this setting, every state is uniquely a mixture of pure states, so the state space is a simplex. Here's quantum mechanics. The test space consist of the set of unordered orthonormal bases or frames for a Hilbert space H, let's say a complex Hilbert space H. It's often denoted this way, fractur F of H. States on this test space, by Gleason's theorem, have the familiar form. Every state is induced by a unique density operator. In particular, it follows then that pure states have this form. I could have written that as a psi, and then you have basically the Born rule of the first slide. Now, I want to point out that these two examples, the quantum and the classical example, do have some affinities, some things in common. One is that in each case, every pure state makes some outcome certain. And conversely, if you give me an outcome, there's a unique pure state making that outcome certain. I'm going to adopt this notation. If
if there is such a unique pure state making outcome x certain, I'll denote it by epsilon sub x, the condition that for every outcome x there is a unique state making it certain, I call sharpness. A model is sharp if that's the case. So both quantum and classical probability theory are sharp. The set of density matrices, of course, isn't a simplex, but it's still true that every state has a kind of a preferred decomposition, at least generically, as a mixture of orthogonal pure states. And we can abstract that feature. Let's agree to call a set of states, pure or otherwise, alpha 1 through alpha n orthogonal if they are sharply distinguishable in one pass. That is to say, if there is a test E and outcomes of E, one for each state, such that the probability of the ith outcome in the ith state is 1. Okay? So that we'll just call states orthogonal if that's the case. I'm going to call it a state in any test space spectral if you can arrange to express it as a mixture of states that are orthogonal in this sense. So in quantum mechanics, you can always do this. And in the case where you have non-degenerate states, uniquely so, in classical probability theory, you can, of course, trivially do this. The point masses are orthogonal, and everything's a uniquely vector mixture of those. It's worth noticing that a pure state can still be spectral. It's spectral if and only if it makes some outcome certain. Yeah? Just to make it clear that both of these properties are fairly special, here's a whimsical example, entomological example. Imagine the following setting. A firefly is sealed into a triangular box of which this diagram is meant to be a top-down view. The box is divided inside into three chambers, A, B, and C, as shown. I want you to imagine that the firefly is able to move freely between the chambers. Also, that the box is sealed completely, except that the three sides are made of something like frosted glass so that I can look through a given side. And if the firefly, let's say I'm looking through the bottom here, if the firefly is in chamber A and flashing, I'll see some sort of a spot of light on that side. Yes? And if he's over here on B flashing, I'll be able to detect that. However, if the firefly is back here in chamber C with his light on and I'm looking through the bottom wall, I want to insist that I can't see that flash of light. So it's important that these interior partitions, though they're permeable to fireflies, be impermeable to light. Usually when I say that, people think that's very strange. But it's not, because you could just make the walls thick and put little angled tunnels through them. Yeah, well, okay. Maybe that would work too. OK, so in this setting, each exterior wall corresponds to a test of measurement. The bottom wall corresponds to the measurement according to which I can see a light on in chamber A, a light on in chamber B, outcome A, outcome B. Or maybe I don't see anything, which I'll denote by X. Similarly, looking through this northeast facing wall, I could see a light in chamber C, a light in chamber B, or nothing. I'll call nothing in that case Y. And then there's a third experiment corresponding to the remaining wall. If you compute the state space of this sort of toy test space, you find that it's got five pure states. Four of them are predictable dispersion-free states, according to which the firefly is in one of the three chambers flashing, or the firefly's light is not on and you can't tell where it is. And there's a fifth pure state, a kind of an eccentric one, that gives you probability 1/2 to see the firefly lit up in one of the rooms, you know, regardless of which wall you're looking through. You might want to think of that as the state of a gregarious firefly that's, you know, that's tracking you. You look through the bottom wall and it comes to say hello, choosing one chamber or the other at random. The reason I present this is just to show you that, first of all, not every state needs to be spectral. That's a pure state, but it's not making any outcome certain, so it's not spectral in kind of a trivial way. And it's also not the case that any outcome is made certain by a particular pure state. For example, if I have the firefly lit up in chamber B, then that, oh, actually, I have to be a little careful about this.
yes, then the only pure state in which I'll see that outcome is the one that corresponds to that situation. On the other hand, if I look through, say, the bottom wall and I don't see anything, there are two pure states that could give rise to that situation. One in which the firefly's in chamber C lit up, and the other one in which the firefly's light is just not on, and I don't know where he is. So sharpness is a real restriction on a theory, and so is, or on a model rather, and so is spectrality. Okay, let's talk briefly about entanglement. If I have two test spaces, think of these as Alice's and Bob's test space, I can construct a new test space of sort of joint tests, if you like, just by considering Cartesian products of tests chosen from the two sides. We'll call those product tests. A bipartite state would just be a state on that Cartesian product. And I'm going to say that such a bipartite state is non-signaling if it has well-defined marginal states. In other words, if omega 1 of outcome x on the Alice side obtained by summing over all of the outcomes of some test on the Bob side is independent of what test on the Bob side I choose, and similarly on the other side. So I cannot send information statistically or probabilistically just by choosing to make one measurement or another. Mixtures of product states, a product state is just what you think it is. Take a state for Alice, a state for Bob, and multiply. Mixtures of such product states are obviously influence-free. I'm sorry, I should say non-signaling here. They're obviously non-signaling. But in general, unless one of the two state spaces is a simplex, there will always exist entangled influence-free states that are not mixtures of product states. That's what I mean by entangled. If you have an influence-free, I keep saying influence-free, non-signaling, influence-free is another term for it. If you have a non-signaling state omega, then you can define conditional probabilities as you see here. If you have an outcome x on the Alice side, then there's a conditional probability on the Bob side, omega sub 2 given x, for outcome y given by the joint probability divided by the marginal probability to see outcome x. And as long as, of course, as long as omega 1 of x is positive, that's well defined. If it's 0, then just say set that conditional thing equal to 0. Similarly, of course, you've got conditional states going the other way. And it's easy to check that these obey obvious analogs of the law of total probability, which I've written down here and here. So in particular, for example, omega 2 is the sum over any test you like of the marginal probability to see outcome x of that test times the conditional probability on the second system given that outcome. Okay? All right, let me define what I mean by a composite of two probabilistic models. Composite of two probabilistic models, let's say A with state space omega, B with state space gamma, is a model that will consist of a test space fracture C that should at least contain the product tests. I should be able to make any measurements I like in the two wings. I want states on the larger test space to be determined by their values on product outcomes. If not, I can cut the model down, so that's not a severe restriction. With this assumption, states on C are in effect bipartite states on A and B, so I can speak of them that way. With that convention, I want to insist also that whatever this creature here is, whatever this convex set omega tensor gamma is, it is a convex set of non-signaling states that contains all the product states. That means that it's a tensor product of the two state spaces in the sense of the theory of tensor products of convex sets. Finally, I want to assume that whatever this joint test or this joint state space is, when I condition joint states therein by outcomes on one side or the other, I get states that are in the indicated restricted state spaces. I mean, those things will a priori be states on A and B, but they might not be in the restricted state spaces that I chose. So I'll just enforce that condition. Still being a little bit rough, a probabilistic theory is going to be a class of probabilistic models that's at least closed under some rule for forming composites.
If one wanted to be more formal, one would speak of some sort of a category of test spaces and rather of probabilistic models. One might want to insist that, this rule give you some sort of monoidal product on that, but I don't want to go that route, at least not right now. All right, so here are some quick examples of probabilistic theories. I could look at quantum models, or at least models that, I guess these are really examples of composites. I could look at two quantum test spaces, set of frames of Hilbert space one, set of frames of Hilbert space two. And then I could take for the composite test space, the set of frames of their tensor product, and I could take as the joint state space, the set of density operators on that tensor product of Hilbert spaces. That's just what one does in quantum mechanics. But I could do other things. For example, I could take a fracture C to consist only of product frames, that is, only of product tests. Or I could take omega tensor gamma to consist only of unentangled states, or maybe of all non-signaling states, whether they are completely positive or not. So there are a lot of different possibilities here. The definition is fairly loose, in spite of all of the conditions. Here's a lemma. I won't, in view of the time, I won't go through the proof, except to say that the proof is the familiar proof. There's nothing novel there. It's true, even in this very general setting, that if you have a pure state in a composite, either marginal of which is pure, then the state you're looking at is, in fact, a product state, the product of those two marginals. From which it follows that if you have an entangled pure state, its marginals must be mixed, right, just by contraposition. That fact is often used to underwrite a distinction, between so-called proper and improper mixtures in quantum mechanics. And one can take different views, I guess, about how well formed, how seriously to take that distinction. But it's a distinction that's pretty commonly accepted as a real one. And I'm going to just observe that if you buy that distinction in quantum mechanics, you have to buy it here too. Okay, now just by way of advertising, there are lots of other characteristically quantum phenomena besides entanglement that turn out to be either generically non-classical or to obtain subject to very weak additional constraints. Examples would include the Poynting and the broadcasting theorems. You see papers by Howard and John and Matt and myself over the last couple of years. One can also get post-selective teleportation and entanglement swapping to work in fairly great generality, not in total generality, and even deterministic teleportation with some additional constraints. Another thing that turns out to be quite generic, as I'm now going to attempt to show you, is a version of the measurement problem. So let's talk about measurement, answering finally your question at the beginning. There's a standard model of quantum measurement, even if it's a little bit of a cartoon model. Let's just review it. According to this standard von Neumann measurement scheme, if I want to measure a discrete observable, let's say a test, E on some object system O, say represented by Hilbert space H sub O, then I couple this object system to an apparatus system with its own Hilbert space H sub A, where the apparatus system is initially in some pure ready state represented by a unit vector Y0. The coupled system then undergoes a unitary evolution, U, let's call it, that perfectly correlates the target observable E with some pointer observable, which in this framework would just be some orthonormal basis of the, of the apparatus. That's the type that should be an A, right? So the unitary needs to satisfy this constraint that if the object system is in state Xi, which is of course the eigenstate that makes outcome Xi certain, and this is the ready state of the apparatus, then after the interaction, the target observable state is undisturbed, and the pointer observable is in some state that records the fact that that's the outcome that you got. And of course, this doesn't completely determine you, but it's obvious that you can define you. You can define you by defining it arbitrarily on the complement of the orthocomplement of the span of these guys. A little bit more generally, U takes an arbitrary initial state vector that's expanded with respect to these orthonormal vectors xi, as here, to
this final state vector over here. And according to the standard measurement problem, that's a problem, because if V is a proper superposition of the Xi's, in other words, if more than one of the coefficients Ci is positive, then this final state we just wrote down is entangled, an entangled pure state, and accordingly A's marginal state after interaction, while it is a mixture that looks like the right mixture, is an improper mixture and therefore can't be given an ingredients interpretation, et cetera, a story you've all heard before. Now, Everett's solution, Chris asked me, I guess at lunch, if I was gonna say nasty things about Everett, and I didn't have time to go back and put scare quotes around solution, so sorry. Everett, the solution offered by Everett in his papers, I guess in what, 57, is that right? They're about the same year as Gleason, is that after measurement, the apparatus is actually in all of the final states y sub I simultaneously. That all you can say is that the state of the apparatus is yi relative to the state of the system being xi, and of course a simple way of unpacking that is to say that there are many different possible worlds, at least at that moment, in each of which there is a definite fact of the matter about which correlated pair of apparatus and object system states obtain. Okay, so question, how much of this story, this familiar story, can be reproduced in the more general setting that I sketched over the last several minutes? Well, I think a lot of it can be reproduced. Let's start by asking what we might mean by a measurement in a very general probabilistic theory of the sort we're considering. Suppose that we have what we're going to think of as an object system, A, with state space omega, and a particular test E in script A that we'd like to somehow model the measurement of dynamically. Suppose we have a second system that's supposed to do the measurement, B gamma. We couple the two systems, so we have a composite. And then we want, I would think, at least the following ingredients. We need some sort of an affine mapping, affine just meaning convex combination preserving mapping, from the coupled state space to itself, which we can think of as a measurement dynamics, if you like, it's some sort of evolution of the states of the system. We need some sort of initial apparatus state, call that B naught. And if we're taking seriously the spirit of what I earlier called view A, I think what one is after is not necessarily a target test in B, something much weaker in a way, just some set of final apparatus states indexed by the outcomes of the target observable. Final apparatus states, we'll call them, with the sort of rough or preliminary interpretation that beta x is the state of the apparatus that somehow encodes the fact that the apparatus saw outcome x, right? Without saying anything in detail about how that encoding takes place, we just say we have some faith that apparatus states can encode things like that. And then finally, we want one condition. It's a very weak condition, but I'm trying to be as general as possible here. And that is that the second marginal, that's the apparatus side marginal, of the state of the system after evolution, if the initial state was object system in state alpha, apparatus in its ready state, is, so to speak, the right mixture of these final states. I want it to be a mixture in which the state beta x that records the fact that we saw outcome x shows up with probability, with mixing weight, that is the probability, the alpha probability of outcome x, right? I think that's the least you should require, right? That's not much, but you know, if you don't have that, your measurement dynamics isn't really doing what you wanted it to do. It's not really coherent. Okay, let's take that as our working definition of what a measurement is, what a measurement dynamics is. Are there any? Well, yes, sure. It's easy to come up with measurement dynamics. In fact, here's a general recipe. Just pick any states you like, indexed by the outcomes of your target observable. Pick any apparatus side states, indexed the same way, call them alpha x's, and just define a map that takes any bipartite state you like, omega, to this thing, It's the mixture of the alpha x's tensor, the beta x's, with mixing coefficients given by the first marginal of omega. That does the job. It's affine. Well, very nice. Of course, that mapping certainly takes pure states to mixed states. In fact, to separable mixed states. It's highly non-reversible. Well, maybe that shouldn't bother us. But I think it would bother some people. People who really are attracted to the idea that measurement dynamics should be fairly gentle. Here's an example of a gentle measurement. It's the quantum measurement we discussed earlier. The unitary operator U induces an affine evolution of the joint quantum state space. It's a very simple one. States just go to states composed with the inverse of the unitary. And that's obviously an affine automorphism of the composite state space. It takes the initial state corresponding to outcome x being certain on the apparatus on the object side of the object system in its, or rather the apparatus system in its ready state, to this state in which object and apparatus are correlated. I'm assuming here this is a pure state. I guess that was said in the earlier discussion. Right? So that's a very gentle kind of measure. So one can ask the question, fine, those quantum measurements are gentle relative to this first example. Maybe we can engineer gentle measurements more generally. Well, let's define our terms a little bit more carefully. Let's say that a measurement dynamics mu, is purity preserving. If it always takes pure joint states, pure bipartite states to pure bipartite states. Certainly a reversible measurement, an affine automorphism will do that for you, but more general things can do that as well. For purposes of stating the next lemma, let's agree that a state alpha is an eigenstate for a test E on the system side, the object system side, if the state alpha assigns probability to 1 to one of E's outcomes. Okay? An eigenstate tells you what outcome you're going to see. Well, here's the lemma, which, as you see, is a nothing, right? It's just an observation. If mu is a purity-preserving measurement, and alpha, the initial object system state, is pure, but not an eigenstate of E, then the final bipartite state, the post-measurement bipartite state, must be entangled. Right? Alpha is not an eigenstate of E. By assumption about what you mean by a measurement, the second marginal, the apparatus side marginal, is this mixture, but alpha wasn't an eigenstate, and you know some of these are non-trivial coefficients. It's a non-trivial mixture, and since mu is purity preserving, this is the marginal of a pure state. Well, the pure states that have mixed marginals are entangled. Okay, one thing we should quickly dispense with. What happens if every state's an eigenstate of E? In that case, call E classical. It's kind of interesting to note that the lemma says that a purity-preserving measurement of a non-classical test requires entangled. Right? In the measurement problem, you're thinking of entanglement as a bad thing, but I think you could also take the opposite point of view and say, you know, if you want measurement dynamics that even do the minimal job that I articulated in my definition, you better have entangled, or you won't be able to measure even in that very weak sense. So that means that if you want to measure non-classical observables, in some sense, you need non-classical apparatus. Okay, but let's focus now on what might be problematic about this picture. I claim that we now have a generic version of the standard measurement problem, at least in the sense that I can rehearse that problem almost verbatim. If alpha is not an eigenstate, of, that's a typo, that should say E, and mu is purity preserving, mu of alpha, is not a proper mixture of the, and again, that's a typo, that should be mu 2, the apparatus side marginal, is not a proper mixture of the pointer states, beta x. So the apparatus system isn't in one, isn't actually in any one of those states. No particular measurement outcome has been recorded. So it would seem that purity preserving dynamics, and in particular, therefore, reversible dynamics, can't account for the outcomes of non-classical observables in any theory. Yes? Okay.
this isn't how I normally think of the measurement problem, which is whether the state is proper and proper mixture is irrelevant the way I think about it. It's the question that, you know, you want to, the measurement problem is, you know, a set of people who think that the state is a complete description, and therefore that complete description does not contain the fact that there's a single outcome.
Yeah, but this is one of the particular ways that that group of people commonly tries to unpack that discontent.
Is by distinguishing proper.
Yes, this is actually quite common, at least in this sort of philosophy of physics, or philosophy of quantum mechanics literature.
Okay. If this is their way of kind of hand waving to say it's not a problem, or
no, this is their way of hand waving to say that it is a problem. Or this is perhaps their way of explaining what it is they find problematic.
The fact that it's not a proper mixture. Yes. But the fact that the set of proper and improper mixtures are equivalent. I don't understand how
they want to say that it's not admissible. This is why I tried to say something earlier about the possibility that one might not take this distinction very seriously. If one is taking the distinction seriously, as a great many people do, and if one is taking it as the central obstacle to interpreting that final state as being the kind of mixture you want it to be, then that discontent is going to carry over to this very general framework. Right? The argument goes something like this. If it really were in one of the beta x's, then the global state would have to be a pure state with that pure state as a factor, but it isn't, therefore it can't be. Well, you know, that's not a mathematical argument. I'd be the first to want to say that. Okay, but anyway, let's suppose that we still bother. Here's what I think is an absolutely reasonable, brutally reasonable, I'm almost inclined to say definitive response. Who cares? Who says that states have to be pure states? Right? And in particular, if we don't think that real states are really always pure states, then why are we hung up on purity preserving or reversible measurements? What's wrong with the kind of measurement I showed you earlier? Something like, I guess that corresponds to something abstract like the collapse dynamics, perhaps. But let's leave that reasonable response aside, okay? Because we're trying to do an exercise. So at least we have the following question, or the following exercise, which I think is at least interesting. Can we take the familiar strategies for solving a quantum measurement problem, no collapse interpretations in particular, and get them to work in this fairly generic setting? I think that trying to do this should at least help to clarify these interpretations, or at least should help clarify them for me. But I find it's almost impossible for me to understand anything unless I see it in this sort of general setting. And it also might just possibly help us to characterize quantum mechanics. Okay, so let's talk very briefly about Everett. I started at about 5 after, is that right? Okay, so I'll talk for just a few minutes. One thing that is important to tell the little Everett, or cartoon version of the Everett story that I told earlier, is that measurement interactions should correlate the target observable with some pointer observable. So let's adopt this language. Let's say that a bipartite state composite correlates two tests. If there's some bijection, it matches up the outcomes of one test with those of the other, such that the probability of getting a pair of outcomes from the one test and the other is zero unless the two outcomes are matched by that bijection. Right? The bi-orthogonal decomposition, the Schmidt decomposition theorem in quantum mechanics tells us that pure bipartite states there are always correlated, at least one pair of observables. It's kind of interesting that already the assumption that a state is correlating has some punch to it. In particular, one can show that the marginals of a correlating bipartite state are spectral. I won't really pursue that right now because I'm out of time. I think it's perhaps worth noting. Anyway, suppose we want to put a law, some sort of generic interpretation to our generic measurement problem. I think we need to guarantee at a minimum that every test on fractal rate, everything we might want to measure, admits some measurement dynamics mu, which would correlate the target observable with some observable on the apparatus, if we want to tell that if we're instrumenting. I think it's also reasonable to assume, maybe even as part of the general definition of the measurement, that the final measurement, or pardon me, the final apparatus state be, in fact, the conditional post-measurement state given the outcome x, roughly on the argument that if I have to predict what the final apparatus state is, knowing that the outcome x occurred, I'd like to predict the right thing. So that's a regularity requirement for measurement. Measurements are better if they satisfy that condition. If mu is, in fact, correlating and satisfies this condition, then it follows, using the law of total probability that I mentioned earlier, that the final states beta x are, in fact, eigenstates of a pointer observable, and therefore the post-measurement state, or the second marginal of mu alpha, is spectral. That's kind of interesting. But again, let's leave that sort of aside. I want to say, kind of as an ad hoc, provisional, working definition, that a probabilistic theory is weakly Everettian. If every test E on the object side admits a purity-preserving, correlating measurement with final states of this form independent of alpha. So how strong a constraint is that? We can certainly, you know, ask that question. There's a definition. How strong a constraint is it? Well, when I first started to tackle this exercise, my feeling was it wouldn't be much of a constraint. The Everett interpretation would turn out to be very general, very generic, and so much the worse for the Everett interpretation. But actually, it turns out to be fairly hard to find things like this, or at least so far it seems that way. Time is about out, so I'm just going to very quickly say that I can manufacture theories that are weakly Everettian if I have enough symmetry. In particular, if I have a model that is sharp, every outcome is certain, has probability one in a unique pure state, and if I assume also that there is a composite of the system with itself that has a great deal of symmetry as laid out up there, then I can prove in that set that in fact every test in factor A admits a reversible correlating measurement with final states that are in fact the indicator states, the pure states that guarantee these outcomes. So that seems like what we want. One would want to say that subject to the hypotheses here, we have a way of constructing a sufficient condition for constructing Everettian theories. But it turns out not to be such an easy thing to construct theories that have all of those problems. So where that leaves us, I'm not sure. I'm very eager to entertain suggestions. It's not clear to me that what I think is the fundamental assumption that drives a lot of the interpretive literature of quantum mechanics, which is that states must be pure states at the end of the day, finally, states are pure states, is reasonable. And if I don't assume that, then it's not clear to me that this is, you know, that important an exercise. On the other hand, it is true that in quantum mechanics, you do have purity-preserving, indeed reversible measurements. And it's an interesting question. How strong a constraint on a probabilistic theory is that? How strong a constraint is it that a probabilistic theory admit measurement dynamics with certain desirable properties? So it may be that even if we don't take the Everett interpretation, or indeed the whole interpretation project, very seriously, that just by examining it in this framework, we are having suggested to us some useful structural constraints that might help to characterize quantum theory instruction. So I better stop there. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes.
So the distinction between view A and view B.
Mm-hmm.
Wondered whether there was a suggestion for what to call that. I'm not sure exactly what distinction you have in mind, so let me just ask. If, when you characterize it as, on the one hand, you know, the view A is analogous to differential equations, and view B is sort of an extension of quantum probability theory, it sounds as if view A and view B might just be a view wherein quantum states are ontic or epistemic?
I think it's close to that.
Okay.
I think that if you're inclined to say that states in classical probability theory are epistemic,
yeah,
then that's exactly the way that you want to parse that. But not everybody takes that view of classical probability theory, and I don't really want to make this discussion subordinate to a discussion of interpretation of classical probability.
You don't mean epistemic in exactly the quite as narrow a sense as you do when you're talking about contextuality. Epistemic in the sense that there are underlying ontic states.
Right.
This is epistemic in a broader sense.
Yeah. And the other distinction that seems to do some justice is between ontic approaches to the quantum state and maybe operational interpretation of the quantum state. So the framework you have needn't be interpreted as having to do with anybody's knowledge. It could just be having to do with making operational predictions.
That's right. And so, in fact, one view of that distinction is that it's a distinction between exactly as you say, an operational interpretation of quantum mechanics. And, well, the other adjective is going to be, I'm not sure, maybe ontic. Maybe dynamical, physical, even if one wanted to really pick a fight.
Well, I would just replace of quantum mechanics with of the quantum state.
Okay.
So, is there a difference between operational view and, say, minimal statistical interpretation? Not the same thing, but you're just, if the mathematical formalism is an instrument, describes outcomes of tests.
Yeah, I mean, if you take the point of view that quantum mechanics, and by that I don't mean, of course, this particular application of quantum mechanics to model this particular physical situation or that particular application. I mean the framework of quantum mechanics. If your view is that that is really an instrument to make predictions, probabilistic statistical predictions about the results of measurements, then you are talking about some kind of doctrine of chances, right? Some sort of extension of classical probability theory. And if that's how you're going to look at it, you can look at it that way. Then the details of that formal apparatus, the details of that mathematical apparatus, start to look kind of mysterious or undermoving. Okay? Does that address your question?
No, yeah, that's fine.
Well, I need to push on the point, but it seems the distinction you were making there between A and B is not just states are ontic, states are epistemic. I say this just digging from my own experience, because I've been confronted with the following option.
Okay.
The option is, fine, view states epistemically. We'll grant you that. That doesn't seem unreasonable. John Barrett would even say that. But then he'd say, but do you still want to be, or maybe he wouldn't, Harvey Brown certainly, mm-hmm. Do you still want to take measurement as a primitive notion? Shouldn't you, in a complete view of the world, have measurement arise as a physical process? Even though states are epistemic, we've all agreed on this all along. But I thought that was the distinction that you were trying to capture.
I think that Harvey Brown point of view is the point of view of somebody who might accept that it's reasonable to ask of a theory that is initially presented in probabilistic terms, that it support a kind of reasonable measurement dynamics, which is kind of the point of view that I was perhaps in a clumsy way trying to work out here. Whether that's strictly this sort of initial version of UA or something that one might come to, in a little more reflection, I'm not sure. But I wanted it with you this very brief description of what I call UA to capture the idea that many people have that somehow in a complete physical theory, one should account for the fact that outcomes occur and that they have certain probabilities dynamically. So that is, I agree with basically what Chris has said. That's a little bit more than just a statement about the quantum state and whether it's epistemic.
It simply seems reasonable to say that, so one direction this may be reasonable for any, which may be built into the structure of one of these theories, even completely abstractly interpreted, to say that, well, if I can interact something with the measurement apparatus and certain conditions hold of that interaction, I should consider that to be a measurement, and I have a messed up formalism if I did include the set of measurements.
That's right.
That should probably be fairly automatically incorporated in this formalism, or?
Well, I think what I'm driving at the end is that I think in order for the measurement dynamics to be, okay, let me back up. It's automatically incorporated to a certain extent if you don't mind that measurement interactions might be very far from reversible. Yeah. Quantum mechanics is fairly special in the sense that certain interactions we count as measurement interactions are reversible. I think it's worth exploring what the abstract consequences of that are. Yes? Okay. Yes? Yes, Alejandro.
I got very emotional, but I would like to know how the Girardi approach to quantum mechanics is seen in your discussion.
The Dirac approach?
Girardi approach.
Girardi approach.
Yeah.
I focused mostly on no collapse interpretations, but I think that the Girardi interpretation probably fits into this scheme reasonably well, in the sense that if you look at isolated systems, you can see that evolution as a non-reversible kind of measurement evolution. Of course, as somebody pointed out to me, it's also completely positive, which means you can dilate it to a reversible measurement on a larger system if you throw in the environment. Whether states are dilatable to pure states in this framework is another question entirely. That's an interesting line to pursue, but part of my thinking so far. Yes, Rob.
Tell me if this is an accurate characterization of what part of your talk was. It seemed to me if you want to contemplate one of these alternatives to quantum theory being interpretable not just in view B but also in view A, then you need certain things to hold.
Yes.
So in particular, it seems that you need to have something like a Nyemark extension theorem, a way of being able to treat measurements within the formalism of the theory, where you can now say, well, you know, I could consider the measurement directly on the system, or I could consider the measurement to be on a probe which interacts with the system. And so I got the impression that a lot of that was just saying, here's the set of theories which we could possibly run this sort of argument on. Is that?
That's the kind of thing I'm trying to do. I'm not sure if I would necessarily. I'm not sure if I would necessarily characterize the requirements that I was sketching as generalizing specifically the Nyemark extension or the Steinspring extension. I think they're a little too general to, you know, I'll allow for that. I mean, in particular, I don't need the Nyemark extension in order to verify the conditions that I would like for measurement are satisfied in quantum mechanics. Nor do I need it to guarantee the pure states, part of the mixed states dilate to pure states, which is something that arguably plays into things like the Everett interpretation. But it's still a very interesting question. It's one of many related interesting questions. Is there an abstract version of the Nyemark dilation theorem? How constraining is it on a probabilistic theory that something like that be available? I guess Howard and I, we thought about that at one point a little bit. Right, exactly. But we haven't done it yet, so might not be there.
So we should thank Alex again, and thank you for coming.
You're welcome.